This is Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Just outside an Inglewood school, a couple dozen folks have gathered to protest the permanent closure of the school.
Save our school! Sign the petition!
Warren Lane Elementary opened way back in 1948, not long after this Inglewood community of small bungalows was first built, and generations of locals have attended ever since. People gathered out front say if the school closes for good this August, the neighborhood will lose more than just a place to send their kids to get an education.
Community is established here. It's like the heartbeat.
Save our neighborhood, save our community.
That's Mary Johnson, whose granddaughter and great-granddaughter both attended the school, and John Hughes, a former Warren Lane teacher of 20 years. Now, Warren Lane is beloved by the neighborhood, but enrollment is only at a quarter of the school's capacity. Inglewood Unified says that makes it too expensive to keep the doors open. It's a painful dynamic, and it isn't just happening here in Inglewood. Neighborhood schools like Warren Lane are closing all across the state as enrollment in public schools continues a drastic decline. KCRW's Megan Jamerson picks up the story from here.
Take a walk through Morningside Park, and you'll find a quiet, well-kept, predominantly Black neighborhood. It's middle class, with the highest average income in Inglewood. And as home prices rise here, this is exactly the kind of place you would expect to find a cute little neighborhood school. Here's homeowner Taj Powell.
There's million-dollar homes here now. The average price is $750,000 and up. So why wouldn't you want a school in a neighborhood like that? You would never dream of closing a school in Beverly Hills.
Powell and his wife, Mary Chang, bought a house down the street from Warren Lane Elementary so they could send their two boys there. The oldest was going to start kindergarten in the fall. Now Powell and Chang are the organizing forces behind a petition to stop the school closure.
I mean, my child literally could walk to this school. It's the ideal scenario. As well as, I have family in the neighborhood, and it's a community. And not having a school in it, it's hard to imagine.
Warren Lane Elementary is a struggling school in the struggling Inglewood Unified School District. Only 143 kids attend the elementary school, which has room for 400 K-6 students. One reason may be student test scores. In 2019, only 5% were proficient at math, and 15% were proficient in English on statewide standardized tests. Very low test scores are a problem across the district, and that leads parents to pull their kids out of Inglewood schools, says John Hughes. He was a special education teacher at Warren Lane for 20 years.
The cream of the crop of that school, they're leaving now. That's what happened. So those scores are showing up in other schools from the hard work of the teachers as well that were there.
Some students have gone to other school districts in LA. Others have gone to charter schools. In Inglewood Unified, enrollment has dropped by more than half in 20 years, from an early 2000s high of over 17,000 students to today's projected low of just under 8,000. But dropping enrollment is not just an Inglewood problem. LAUSD has seen a 40% drop in enrollment over the same period. The pandemic accelerated this trend across the state, and public school enrollment is projected to keep declining through 2050. Because big picture, people just aren't having as many kids as they used to. Fewer kids enrolled in schools is just bad news for school budgets, explains John Rogers of UCLA's Department of Education.
Because enrollment is connected to educational funding, the district receives fewer dollars. It creates further instability and challenges in the district that then lead family members to be less inclined to send students there. They move to charter schools. It undermines further enrollment, et cetera, et cetera.
Which means we can expect a lot more closures of schools in the future. Just this year, Oakland is proposing closing 7 schools, leading to community protests and even hunger strikes. Now, the choice of what school to close can get complicated fast. In Inglewood, Warren Lane Elementary parent Marion Cofield says the district's choice to close this neighborhood school over other schools in more urban parts of town doesn't feel right.
We have a school right next to the 105, a school right next to the 405. We're not looking at what's going to be best for students long term or what would benefit Englewood as a district. It was just, hey, you have low enrollment.
The office of the county administrator in charge of the district, Erica Torres, declined KCRW's request for comment on the public's reaction to the closure. Parents like Cofield, who has a sixth grade son, are frustrated with what feels to her like district failure to do more to revive Warren Lane and make it attractive to parents.
They never took responsibility for the fact that they could be the reason we have low enrollment. They have not fulfilled the promises to us.
The district first proposed closing the school in June 2020 because of a budget shortfall. There was talk of creating a magnet program to attract new students, but that didn't happen. There was also talk of using local bond money to make critical infrastructure improvements. Warren Lane needs asbestos abatement and repairs to the playground, but so far only the exterior has been painted. Instead, closing Warren Lane is estimated to save the district $9.8 million.
The district may be in a place where they think that they're doing what's best, but they're going to lose a lot of students based on this because there's another school much closer to us that's in LAUSD.
That school has better test scores, says Cofield. The only thing that was keeping her in Englewood Unified was the value of being able to walk her son to Warren Lane and develop connections with neighbors and fellow parents along the way. Now, it might sound illogical to value community involvement over good test scores, but UCLA's Rogers, who studies education inequality, says schools are uniquely positioned to offer more than just book smarts.
We feel a sense of connection to it. It's part of our collective identity. And I think that's a very different notion than this idea that public schools only are a place that provides instructional services to individual students.
And when schools are closed in Black neighborhoods, there is an added level of complex feelings about yet another place of public ownership being lost. Now add on to that the trauma of the pandemic, and Rogers says people need stability and certainty now more than ever.
Our local public institutions give people a sense that there's something that they can turn to when they're in need. And I think change at a time of extreme trauma is particularly problematic.
If the Warren Lane closure goes as planned, parents will have to enroll their students at one of the district's other schools. But this switch isn't necessarily an equal switch, because driving your kid across town means fewer chances to benefit from living in a multi-generational community built up around a school. And that community connection is invaluable to people raising kids, says Cofield.
It changes how you look at yourself. It changes how the child grows up. It adds to their level of confidence. It creates a different type of stability in them emotionally and mentally.
And with LA County projected to see faster than average declines in public school enrollment, more parents like Caulfield may soon see their community support shrink as more school closures are certain. For KCRW, I'm Macon Jamerson.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
It's Greater LA from KCRW, and just down the road from that fight to keep a school open in Englewood, you'll find a company that actually has reason to celebrate. Hawthorne-based SpaceX just sent another rocket to the International Space Station, but for the first time, most of the crew members on board were made up of private citizens.
We're here to experience this, but we understand there's a responsibility, and the responsibility is for this first civilian crew to get it right. And that's what we're fully committed to with the support of everybody here at the ISS and on the ground.
If you have the money, you can get to space. And that was real estate investor Larry Connor. Larry, along with a couple of other people from Canada and Israel, paid millions to spend about 8 days living and working aboard the International Space Station. Here to tell us more is Ramin Skiba. He writes about space for Wired magazine. Ramin, welcome to you.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
These are not trained astronauts. They've paid large sums of money to make this trip. I mean, what kind of training regimen did they go through? I mean, is this like space camp?
Well, it's a little more than that. So it's leading the mission is actually a former NASA astronaut, but the paying customers, there are three of them, including Larry Connor. They went through the training with Axiom Space. So it's a SpaceX rocket, but it's a Axiom Space spacecraft that went to the station. And they went through, I think it was about 16 weeks of training. It was sort of like a compact version of NASA astronaut training.
So, you know, if you're the average lay person, right? I mean, how much technical know-how do you need? What if something goes wrong? You said there's a NASA astronaut on board as well, sort of watching everything. But, you know, a crew, you're talking how many people? Four people on this rocket? If something goes wrong, someone's got to know something, right?
That's right. And so fortunately, at this point with technology these days, it's mostly automated. So even the former NASA astronaut doesn't have to do that much. But Larry Connor does have pilot training. And so if they need to, they can do something. But really, other than the NASA astronaut, the rest of them did not have any space flight experience before this, nor any science experience. But since it's automated, they can get there. And then, you know, there's other astronauts already on the space station. And so they're not on their own.
Do we know, Ramin, how much money it costs to get on this rocket? Because I wanted to check my sofa cushions to see if I could gather enough coins be able to go up into space.
I'd love to go up into space, too. But they did not disclose to me the ticket prices, although I asked. It's in the tens of millions, probably.
Tens of millions, probably.
Yeah.
What are they going to be doing up there on the International Space Station? Are we talking about, you know, just floating around, or are they going to actually have jobs up there?
So they did bring a bunch of experiments aboard, but as I said, none of them have science backgrounds. There certainly is information on the website, and from what they've told me, they are going to be conducting some of those experiments themselves, and they did a little of their training did include learning how to run those experiments. But it's sort of in between what a space trip with, you know, Blue Origin or Virgin Galactic, where they just, you know, float up in space, as you say. It's sort of in between sort of a fun trip and an actual astronaut mission, you know, that NASA or the European Space Agency or Russia or whatever would do. So there's a little bit of work and a little bit of fun, although their exact, you know, itinerary they don't disclose.
Yeah, this is more involved than just Jeff Bezos going to the edge of space. This is orbiting on the ISS. This is, as you mentioned, doing those experiments. There's also another company involved here along with SpaceX, right? It's Axiom.
That's correct. And actually, Axiom is leading this mission. So it's a SpaceX rocket and Crew Dragon that brings them up and down. But Axiom is running this mission, and it's sort of like a test mission in a way for Axiom to figure out how things go, because in 2024, they have planned to launch a module for the space station. And then what will eventually happen once the space station is no longer used anymore, because it's gradually getting old, they'll have one or more modules that will detach and then will form their own free-flying space station. And so Axioms will probably be the first commercial space station. But this is the first time that they've actually sent people up into space. And so this is sort of like a practice trip to see how things will go. And there will be three more space flights planned before that first module is attached to the space station.
Three more space flights planned. Are we talking about for the super wealthy again? Is that what this is all going to be about? Only the super wealthy are going to be the lay people who can go up into space?
Yeah, that's something that I've reported on about the inequities involved. Right now, it's basically just really wealthy people who can shell out eight figures, you know, or $10 million or whatever it is to go up into space. Regular people like us, aren't on these flights. There are some programs that people are developing so that occasional space flight passengers are, you know, people who have come from different backgrounds, but they're mostly in their early stages. And so, you know, we'll see how that plays out. But right now, it definitely does seem to be something that is almost entirely saved for the very wealthy.
What's going on at the International Space Station before you let us go, Ramin? I mean, there are professional American astronauts up there, along with cosmonauts from Russia. I don't know what it's like up there, but I know what it's like down here. And there are problems in the relationship between the United States and Russia. Has any of that spread to the space station?
some of it has spread into space, but not really that much into the space station. Astronauts are professionals, and it's really encouraging, heartening to see that if you look up videos, you can see, you know, cosmonauts and astronauts, you know, hugging each other, working together on the space station, like handing, you know, the symbolic key to the station over to their colleagues. They're working together on the space station. It's continuing despite some, you know, rhetoric from the head of the Russian Space Agency, maybe with a little bit of extra tension, but business as usual continue on the space station. And the space station is supposed to continue at least till 2024. And if Russia commits to it, probably 2030. So as far as we know, we have a number of years left of international collaboration and cooperation up there.
Ramin Skiba writes about space for Wired magazine. Ramin, thanks for coming on and for talking to us about it.
Thank you.
Now back in Earth's atmosphere with Greater LA on KCRW, there is a new bakery in the Arts District of DTLA. After years of red tape and pandemic delays, Healthy Indulgence Bakery, also known as High Bakery, opened its doors just a few weeks ago, around the same time that Russia invaded Ukraine. And in addition to satisfying the Angelino sweet tooth, its Ukrainian owner also wants to help.
You know, my mother used to say, always look for the helpers. Anybody who is coming into a place where there's a tragedy. Oh, baby, all I need is my mother. Because if you look for the helpers, you'll know that there's hope.
Tatiana Brunetti was born in Ukraine. She has a mother who was rescued from Kyiv, a sister who's a veterinarian who chose to stay there, looking after a slew of animals left behind by their fleeing owners. So with her new business here in L.A., Brunetti is also focused on giving back. She is sending proceeds from the bakery to a nonprofit called United Animal Rescue. And she joins us now to talk about those efforts and how her home country inspired many of her favorite recipes, too. Hi, Tatiana. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Hi, Stephen. Thank you so much for having me.
I want to ask you about your family. You said your mother escaped Kyiv. Your sister is still there. How are they doing?
Oh, my mom, thank God, back home here with me in Los Angeles. She lost a little bit of her hearing. She doesn't hear well due to this ongoing sirens for weeks at your hometown. My sister is doing great. She's very brave. She has a veterinary clinic. And prior to the war, she, you know, on her spare time, which is not too much she has, but she would go to, you know, different shelters and take the sick animals from there and take them under her care. And, you know, and when the war started, she ended up to driving around different towns and pick up injured animals and also take animals from senior citizens who left Ukraine and couldn't take animals along with them. So she ended up with dozens and dozens animals, some of them sick, some of them healthy. And also she has a shelter outside of town. It's about 1 hour away. And currently there are over 300 animals, which she transported from the different cities which were destroyed and bombed, and animals ended up, you know, being homeless. So she has a lot of, you know, a lot of souls to care for, and she's brave, and she's not thinking of leaving the country because she wants to stand up for her country, and if she needs to defend herself, she will. Or if she needs to defend her animals, she will too.
If someone's listening to this, Tatiana, and they want to help your sister do this, you know, I mean, caring for the animals, I mean, that's also God's work there in Ukraine. What can they do? What can someone do who's listening to this?
There's a great opportunity to help us through our nonprofit. It's called United Animal Rescue. Website www.unitedanimalrescue.com. And you can also visit our Instagram, United Animal Rescue. The rescue itself was founded a couple years ago, and our mission was to concentrate on Brazil because Brazil has a very terrible or no laws at all for, you know, defend animals. And it's a lot. It's over 30 million animals are on the street, and most of them sick, injured, and debilitated. So we created this foundation. And when the war happened in Ukraine, I heard from my sister how things are bad from the videos, what she sent it to me. And I offer, if anything we can do is create a campaign, how can we do that? And she totally were down for it, and she sent us all of the information, all of the list of the sick animals, and we created campaign, and we received about over 150 packages in Los Angeles, and they were transported to Ukraine last Monday, and tomorrow they will be arriving in Kiev. And from there will be transported to the shelters that are in need.
What response have you gotten from your customers and your neighbors in downtown LA? You're in the Arts District, right?
Yes. Well, the response was fantastic. I mean, this is an amazing community, amazing people, very open-minded, extremely evolved with everything what's going on, and from the point of eating healthy organic food to the point of what's happening right now with Ukraine, and very compassionate people. And we're very lucky to be in our district, to be greeted and welcomed by the community. And we are, you know, creating every single day new recipes and putting something new on the shelves. And you know, we're talking about our, you know, foundations and how they can support, because, you know, they some of them do know that I'm Ukrainian, and they approach from the side of hey, what can we do to help. And I really appreciate that. It's a fantastic way of, you know, reaching out from human to a human.
I can't even imagine. I mean, you've been trying to open this for a while. The pandemic happened. That made it difficult. And then when you did finally get this place opened, all of a sudden you have this terrible, you know, calamitous event happening in Ukraine, and the invasion by the Russians. I mean, how is it for you knowing that there are these things happening in your home country? I mean, how, you know, does the bakery help you feel connected to your country? How do you deal with this on a day-to-day basis? That's a lot, especially with your sister there.
The bakery actually is a blessing for me to have right now, to stay busy and focus on the positive side and don't dwell into the, you know, horror and the negative side, because it's a lot of pressure to handle. I mean, when the war started, it was hard to not receive a message from your mom and your sister when the siren going on and their phones are off and they will tell you goodbye. I hope I'll see you after the, you know, talk to you after the, you know, the we back from the bomb shelter. That was a heartbreaking moment, and you know, being in the bakery, that helped. That helped because, you know, I got distracted by you know, looking at their baked goods, explaining where the bread come from, our flour come from. So it keep my mind distracted, but it's a lot of stress for the first few weeks. It was unbearable. But because the, you know, community is so nice, and people in general are so nice, and they are, you know, it's a lot of good words, or a lot of good prayers sent, you know, my way, my family way, to Ukraine, to my country, to my motherland. And that's really carried me on. And you know, I'm very grateful that my sister is alive, her, you know, her animals are alive, her friends who supports her alive. And we pray every day that, you know, that resolution come forward, and there'll be the end of this horror that should never happened.
Well, I want to wish you and your family so much luck, and we're sending you great thoughts and energy and prayers. Tatiana Brunetti, the owner of High Bakery, Healthy Indulgence Bakery in downtown LA's Arts District. Tatiana, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Steve.
Well, sadly, we're out of time for today, but come back again tomorrow when we'll take a trip to SoFi Stadium, not for a football game, for an exhibition One of the largest private collections of African-American art and artifacts in the world. The Kinsey Collection fills concourses over at SoFi, and there's a lot to learn from it. That's tomorrow. Join us online anytime, by the way, at kcrw.com/GLA to hear any story from Greater LA. There's also a place where you can share your comments with us, mention to us some story ideas, all at the website, kcrw.com/GLA. Kaylee Wells, Rebecca Ludman, Juliana Mayo, Robin Estra, Nihar Patel, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, Lorenzo Ponce de Leon, Amy Ta, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordahl all had hands and ears on this evening's show. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thank you for your ears tonight. And have yourself a great night.